everyone. Welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 548 for July 31st, 2015. I am your host, Peter Reitzis, using some good voluntary stuttering from my parents' home, from my childhood home in Wilmington, Delaware. I've been on vacation, but I'm coming out of vacation for this hugely important topic and study. My guests today are Dr. Marie Christine Franken and Miss Caroline de Sonneville Codude. I'm sorry if I butchered your name. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Hi, Peter.
Caroline, you're a first-time guest. Just tell us one more time how we pronounce your name.
Well, in Holland, we say Caroline de Sonneville Codude, but it was okay.
I'm going to do my best. And of course, you're joining us via Skype from the Netherlands. Thank you so much. The stuttering world is so excited about your current study. It's like a record release day, as somebody told me. It's like the Beatles just put out a new album. So you've probably heard this, but everyone's excited about it. So your study is called Direct versus Indirect Treatment for Preschool Children Who Stutter, the Restart Randomized Trial. It's in the journal PLOS1, which is from the Public Library of Science. And I wasn't too familiar with that journal, but my Stutter Talk advisors tell me it's very, very big stuff. So congratulations on your just published study.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. What's also great, I think, is that PLOS One is an open access journal. So everybody who's interested in our study can find it for free on the internet. So that's also an advantage of PLOS publishing in PLOS One.
Yeah, and they won't have to look very far because we'll have the link for it up at stuttertalk.com in the show notes for episode 548. And I just wanted to mention something to the listeners that's aside from your study, but I'm recording from my childhood bedroom. And if somebody would have told me 20 years ago I would be talking openly about stuttering from this seat, I would have thought they were crazy. So I do like to reflect upon how nice it is to make changes and to go from not talking about stuttering to talking about stuttering every day of my life. So I am very appreciative of all the help that I have received from ladies such as yourselves. So, all right. Mm-hmm. So your study, you conducted a randomized controlled trial with an 18-month follow-up with 199 children, a huge study, 199 children who stutter between the ages of 3 and 6. 99 of those children received the Lidcombe program, a direct treatment, and 100 children received the Restart DCM treatment and indirect treatment. And DCM is demands and capacities model. And you concluded that, quote, results imply that at 18 months post-treatment onset, both treatments are roughly equal in treating developmental stuttering in ways that surpass expectations of natural recovery. You also noted that direct treatment decreased stuttering more quickly during the first 3 months of treatment. So, Caroline, take it wherever you will. I mean, tell us in your own words what you did and what was your big finding here?
Well, indeed, we compared the Lidcombe program, which was a relatively new treatment at the time we initiated our study, with the Dutch current standard DCM-based treatments. We compared those treatments on several outcomes. And the main outcome was the percentage of children who did not stutter anymore at a follow-up of 18 months. And that's related to what most parents of children want to achieve with therapy and in line with the treatment goals. And we also had secondary outcomes like functioning, quality of life, the judgment of the parent, the judgment of the child, him or herself. So we had a whole bunch of outcome measures to compare these treatments. And what I think is important to emphasize is that with regards to the DCM-based treatment in our study, we called it the Restart DCM method because it reflects the treatment approach as it is used in the Netherlands by therapists. So it's not to say that every DCM-based approach given by an individual therapist somewhere in the world is necessarily the same as our approach. So our results are on the comparison of the Litcom program to the Restart DCM method. And if people want to see what that method looks like, well, they can also find that for free on the internet. Because
and in our show notes today.
Okay. We wrote it down in a handbook and you have a link of that, I understand. Yeah, great. And, indeed, what you just said is we found that in the first 3 months, the Litcom program resulted in a greater decline in stuttering frequency. But thereafter, this difference was not present anymore. So after 18 months, a comparable number of children were classified as non-stuttering. It was slightly more than 70% in the Restart DCM group and about 76% in the Litcom group. So the stuttering frequency in the Litcom group after 18 months was slightly lower, and also on the secondary outcomes I just mentioned, the parental rating scores and functioning and quality of life, there were slightly better scores for the Litcom group compared to the Restart DCM group, but none of them were significant. So it's not possible to say on this test that both treatments are fully equal or that there's no difference at all in the effects of the treatments. But what we can conclude is after 18 months, both treatments appear roughly equivalent in treating early stuttering. And well, I think that's the most important result for therapists, parents, and policymakers, that there are two options to treat young children who stutter.
Wow. So we just heard from Ms. Caroline de Sunville. And again, I'm sorry for butchering your name, who is a PhD student at Erasmus University in the Department of Health, Policy and Management in the Netherlands, and a speech language pathologist. And I want to turn it over to Dr. Franken, who is a specialist fluency therapist and the speech language research lead at the Speech and Hearing Department of Erasmus University in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. So Dr. Franken, take it wherever you will. I'm curious if any of the results your team found surprised you, or was it what you were expecting?
Well, setting up the study, we did expect that the Litcom program might take maybe a little longer time because of the rather strict behavioral approach. And this requires a rather intense maintenance program of at least 7 sessions after the severity of the stuttering behavior has passed the criterion of no stuttering. So that was one thing. Well, on the other hand, this longer treatment time might result in better outcomes. Well, at the time, we had these promising publications by the Australian group showing very good results with their treatment. So, yes, so the general expectation was, you know, maybe the Litcom program has better outcome but longer treatment time. And if we do look at the results, we see very small differences in that direction. Like Carolyn just said, you know, about 5% difference in recovery rate if we draw the line at 1.5% syllable stuttered at 18 months post-onset, but hardly no difference in percentage syllable stuttered. That Karen did mention those figures, but it's 1.2% and 1.5%. So that's really, well, you know, no difference, I would say. But so very, very small differences, but not statistically significant. So, well, not really a surprise in this. We were surprised, however, by one thing, and that was that so many children could not be included in the study because they stuttered so mildly in the course of actually of the assessment. So parents, you know, came to the clinician and told their worries and were interested in participating in the study, and then they started doing all the baseline measurements, and then it turned out that the stuttering already decreased, you know, below the required entrance severity rate of 3% syllable stuttered. So that was actually something that surprised mm-hmm. us, really.
Well, if I could just jump in there, Dr. Franken. So one of the entry criteria you had for your study was that children had to be stuttering for 6 months. And I was thinking that there are some, if not quite a few children who recover before 6 months. So do you think it's fair for me to think that your study doesn't have to beat that 80% of natural recovery, since some children would have already recovered before even making it into your study?
Right. It's right that some children recover rather quickly, but we know from the data that, well, that percentage is rather low, that they fully recover. But indeed, the first year after onset, it's about 6 to 9% of children that already had recovered. And yes, it is true that there is a small group that will have recovered. But in our study, the mean time since onset was about 18 months, Carolyn, or 16 months?
What was it? 18 months? No. 15 months, yes. It was 15 months.
So much more children, you know, the minimum was 6 months, you know, to step in the study. But we had children who had stuttered for more than 19 months, you know, who came in. So the mean was 15 months. So yes, quite. So yeah, I agree with you that a percentage recovery of 80%, you know, is not the best figure probably to compare our group with, because am I clear on that? Or
yeah, I think so. So let me give you guys a statement, and I don't know who wants to respond, but so when somebody is reading your study and they're preparing a presentation to give to our colleagues, to our speech language pathologist colleagues, so if somebody were to read your study and say, it looks like Lidcombe and the Restart DCM treatments have pretty much the same results, but it looks like that Lidcombe for some might have a faster decline in percentage of stuttering syllables. Is that right?
That's okay.
Okay, right. You first. I'll see what I can add.
Okay, well, you're right that the Lidcombe program resulted in a faster decrease in the first 3 months. So, yes, that might be something that's, it is an important result. I think it might be important to parents who want to see a quick result. But after that, the first 3 months, we saw that the lines on stuttering frequency were very close to each other, and they stay close to each other till 18 months. So, yes, in the first months, you see this this quick response to behavioral therapy, which is a phenomenon that's often seen in behavioral therapy. But after that, the therapies didn't. The results were quite the same. So, well, but maybe Marie-Christine can add yes. something on this.
I would like to add a more in-depth analysis of our results that we presented at the Oxford Dysfluency Congress last year. That was not included in the article, but there we showed results splitting up the mild, moderate, and severe stuttering children in both treatment arms. And we did see that in the Lidcombe arm, the children who stuttered mildly, there was quite a higher percentage of children who we could, who did recover, or who had recovered after 18 months, higher than the mild group in the DCM group. Was that difference, how large was that difference, Carolyn? Was it?
I believe it was almost 20%.
Almost 20%, so we can look that up, 20% difference, while we saw the opposite actually for the severe stuttering children. So there we saw this tendency that in the DCM arm, children, so a higher percentage of children had recovered that stuttered severely who were treated, who had been treated by the DCM approach. So this also could be, you know, a line of future research just to power on severity of stuttering and see, you know, whether children maybe recover better or depending on their severity by one of those two treatments.
Well, so it sounds like one of the things your study has done, which is has proved what's been fairly obvious to many of us, which is that different treatments might be better for different families and different children. I mean, I know it seems obvious, but I mean, do you think that's a fair thing to say?
Yes, I think that maybe one, you could say that, well, I would expect actually that maybe some parents and children would respond to both treatments as equally. But there may be also maybe children and parents, as far as our current knowledge goes now, that maybe would not respond to either treatment, maybe. And maybe there are parents and children who respond better, you know, to one of both treatments. And of course, it would be wonderful if we had the knowledge to predict, you know, which parents and children would respond better to one of both. Yes.
Wow, there are so many places I want to take this. Such great work. This is Stutter Talk with Dr. Marie Christine Franken and Miss Caroline de Sonneville, both in the Netherlands. Thank you for joining us. So, all right. You were talking about future. And you know what? I'm going to take a step back. I have heard so many times over the last 10 years, 8 years, people say very strong things about Lidcombe. I've heard people say, go as far as to say, Lidcombe's the only preschool stuttering treatment we should be using. I've heard people say it's only ethical to use Lidcombe. But Dr. Franken, so, I mean, I would think that your study would put a full stop to statements like that. Like, wait a second. Now there's this huge, incredible study out there saying that basically these treatments are very, very similar in their results. So, can people still say that you should only use Lidcombe? I mean, I guess they can, but should they?
Yeah, well, I think, well, based on the evidence that we have now, I indeed agree that it would be not fair to say that, you know, the best evidence is for Lidcombe, because I think we did a very rigorous study, you know, with numbers of children and the number of participating clinicians and, well, 18 months post-onset, you know, fully blinded analyzing of the data, a fully independent statistician, you know, from another university. So a very rigorous scientific study. And we found more or less, you know, for the whole bunch of children, speaking in means, that, well, the results are comparable, you know, for both treatment arms. So I agree that until, you know, our data were there, that the Lidcombe program had, yes, indeed, much better evidence than other approaches. But right now, I think the situation has really changed. Yes.
So I'm going to ask some questions, and whoever wants to answer them can jump in. So you had Dr. Franken, your group had a pilot study out years ago that had very similar results to your current study. So it was a much smaller study. And there was a criticism I heard made by a few people that, well, that we shouldn't really take the results too seriously because they didn't do lid comb correctly. Now, I didn't hear that from a lot of people. I heard that from a few people. So if somebody were to read your current study and say, yeah, well, let's be careful about the results because they didn't do lid comb correctly, what would be your team's response to that?
Well, I don't know about the criticism in the past, but I would like to hear more about that. But speaking for our current study, I can say that, you know, all 24 participating clinicians have been trained by a Lidcombe consortium trainer and had at least about 1.5 year experience using Lidcombe. So, you know, I think these are really, you know, the criteria that you can set. And I don't know what people can think of, you know, what, you know, can go wrong. I would like to ask them, you know, what could have we improved? What are they thinking? But I really believe that the participating clinicians did Lidcombe as they should do it. And on top of their training, we had meetings every 3 months with all participating clinicians, and we discussed, you know, all kind of questions that came up, just you know, to get a good feel that all clinicians adhered to the protocols of both treatments.
And the people who were rating the stuttering and looking at the results were blinded, so they didn't know what treatment the child had received.
No, they were blinded to treatment and to measurement moments, so they didn't know at all if it was a child who just started treatment, or it was the 6 month measurement, or the last measurement moment, and if it was allocated to the DCM or to the Lidcombe group. No, they didn't know at all. They were not related also to our group. It were it were former students and SLPs who were trained in scoring the stuttering. So they were blinded and not related to the to any of to those therapies also.
Karen was the only person who knew. She was in charge of this, and she did the training, and only she knew the codes, you know, of the children.
And hopefully, Carolyn, the next time you come on air, I'll be calling you doctor, right?
I hope so, yes.
Awesome.
Yes. So, October the 29th, that will be the date she's going to defend her dissertation. So that will be the big day.
Awesome. We'll be sending positive thoughts your way. And again, whoever wants to jump in can take this question. How should speech-language pathologists use your current study to help guide us in our treatment and in our work?
It's quite clear that there's evidence that we have more than one option to treat preschool children who stutter. So therapists and parents, they have an alternative in case one approach doesn't work, or first they have the choice of either treatment, and in case one of them doesn't work, they can shift to the other, or in case one approach is not, suitable for a specific family. So I think what's important for SLPs and as well as parents is that there is this choice, there are these two alternatives, and that they decide together, so the clinician in collaboration with the parent, which treatments would work out best for a specific child.
So this is a question I'm really excited to ask you guys. I alluded to it, but I'm going to ask it again. So Dr. Tom Vidish at the Stuttering Brain blog, he's very excited about your study, and he's hosting for Stutter Talk now, which is really cool. And Tom reported on his blog that, quote, anyone claiming that Lidcombe is the better treatment or the only one scientifically tested is unscientific. End quote. So do you guys agree that your study refutes the often heard claim that Lidcombe is the best stuttering treatment?
Well, yes, I agree with that. And in addition to or what Marie-Christine just said is that before we started our study, most data was available for the LitCom program. But yeah, what we showed is that there's evidence that there's more than one treatment that works in many cases. So, well, I think that's the most important thing. We certainly, our results do not confirm that LitCom is the best treatment for every child, but it does also not confirm that DCM is the best for every child. What it shows is that there are two options, and I think that's the good news for both parents and SLPs.
Yes, and I fully agree to that. You know, at this moment, I think it would be unscientific to claim that the LitCom program is the best stuttering treatment.
Excellent. So I posted a link to your study on Facebook, as did so many of my other Facebook friends. Sort of blanketed Facebook in the last couple of days. And Dr. Joe Klein, who's a great guy, he's now a Stutter Talk host, he wondered if there was a no therapy group as well, and or perhaps at one time you had planned for there to be a no therapy group in this study. Could you comment on that?
I can. And I can say that, well, of course, as a scientist, I would like to do a study with a no therapy, well, you know, with a no treatment arm, a no therapy group. But however, as a clinician and as a parent myself, I can empathize with a concerned parent, but both, you know, based on the evidence that we have ever since actually the 2005 study of the Australian group, which has shown that 9 months after treatment onset, the treatment arm shows lower levels of stuttering than a no treatment control group. Ever since that study, it's actually not ethical to withhold treatment longer than 9 to 12 months. So yes, maybe we could withhold treatment for 9 months again or 12 months, but what would such a study learn us? You know, we know that natural recovery may take years. The biggest amount of natural recovery happens probably between 2 years and 3 years after onset, but withholding treatment for that long, we also know that then the chances for full recovery will have diminished significantly. So although, you know, it would be wonderful to study a no treatment group, as a scientist, ethically, it's really not an option anymore nowadays, I would say.
I tend to agree with you, and just to put it out there for the listeners, what Joe was wondering is, so you had the LitCom treatment arm, the DCM restart treatment arm, and he was wondering, is it possible to have a no treatment arm, so a third group in your study of children who did not receive any therapy? And, you know, the question I say is, I'm a parent, and would I want my child to be in the no treatment arm? And yeah, I wouldn't. I can say that straight up. I would not want my child to be in the no treatment arm. So again, everybody's so excited about your study, and I let some of the Stutter Talk advisors know I was interviewing you just to get some feedback. And one of the studies, one of my advisors who's very excited about your work, we were talking about your results that at 18 months post-treatment onset, both treatments are roughly equal in treating developmental stuttering in ways that surpass expectations of natural recovery. And regarding that last piece, this advisor said to me, it's not clear that either program beat natural recovery. So again, this person really admires your work, but they weren't so, they didn't necessarily agree with you that you had shown that you had surpassed natural recovery. Could you comment on that and explain to us how you made this conclusion?
Yes, I can. But before I do that, maybe I can come back also just for one thing to the previous question.
Sure, please.
Because I forgot to say that Actually, the Australian group has showed in their 1994 study, I believe, that in which they tried to do a study with a control group, that most of parents did request treatment after a certain amount of time. So, like you said, you know, parents want treatment, and it's actually unique that the 2005 study, which was done in New Zealand, because there the main policy was still no treatment before the age of six, that they could do that study on that continent. But again, in the Netherlands, early intervention is actually the, you know, that is, you know, what is being done over here since the 80s of the previous century. So then setting up a study and requiring that parents gives consent to a no treatment arm would really be, you know, again, unethical, but also parents would not choose to do that. Even if you would say, you know, oh, the chances for natural recovery are 80%, you know, you can do that. Well, no.
And just for our listeners who don't know, what 2005 study were you referring to?
Oh, I'm sorry. That is the 2005 study by the Jones Group et al., showing the effect of Lidcombe treatment compared to no treatment 9 months post-onset treatment.
Yeah, and
so the randomized control study.
Yeah, I think the title of that study is Randomized Controlled Trial of the Lidcombe Program of Early Stuttering Intervention. So if you could, and thank you for that. Could you now address that one thought about your study showing that your results surpassed natural recovery?
I think there are two parts to this question. The first part is when we do compare recovery rates compared to time since onset of stuttering, and when we are, you know, comparing our results to the data of the Illinois group, Yair and Ambrose's data, they had a recovery percentage of 63% 3 years post onset stuttering, and at our 18 months post-treatment onset point, so the mean time since onset was 33 months for our group. So the best, you know, the way of comparing figures, I think, is the 3 years post-onset, so the 36 months to our 33 months. And then we have a comparison of about 63% to ours, 5%, you know, so about a mean of 73%, a mean. So that is a difference of about 10% at that moment in time. But again, of course, we know from this study, from the Illinois study, that ultimately, you know, after 4 years, after 5 years, the recovery percentage will be, you know, 74 to 79%. So we would need more time to see if our data in the long term will beat those figures. So if you put it in a very, you know, critical way, you could say so far you have shown maybe only that treatment can speed up natural recovery. So because the figures seem to be as high as what we would have got with natural recovery, but time needs to learn if the recovery rates go up after, well, when more years have elapsed. So that's actually, well, the challenge for us now to really collect the follow-up data and see how we're doing. How the children are doing, sorry, we are doing.
No, that's fine. And I'll add something I said a little bit earlier. I think you have even more of a cushion there too, because just doing this work for 15 years, I have people call me, you know, not that it happens all the time, but it happens where they call me with a 3-year-old who stutters and then they cancel the appointment because 2 weeks later, the child's not stuttering anymore. Then they call me a month later and they say the child's not stuttering anymore. So I'm of the mind that there are children who recover well before 6 months. I don't know how many, but I think there are some. So again, I think your study actually missed some of the kids who would have covered anyway. So that's why I say I think you have even more of a cushion.
Yes, and I agree. Yes. I agree with that, because it is, the inclusion criterion was at least 6 months, but we did have children who started more than 12 months, and also a substantial group who started more than 19 months. So we know that the recovery percentage, you know, the chances for full recovery for that group has diminished significantly. So, and again, yes, you say that we have lost, you know, a group which would have, which has recovered already, you know, before that, the time they were included. Yes, right.
If I could ask a question, I actually meant to ask it earlier. So when I was reading your study, at 18 months, you reported data that you had audio tapes for 173 children, and your study started with 199. So I meant to ask you earlier in the conversation, so what happened to those other 26 children?
Well, indeed, we started with 199 children, and 21 children were lost to follow-up. So they dropped out of the study, and they dropped out because of varying reasons, like some of them moved to another place, and sometimes parents weren't contactable anymore, or there were difficulties in home situation. And I know of three children who were lost shortly after inclusion because of the clinician stopped participating because of her private situation. So, yeah, these are different reasons why these children dropped out of the study. But for some of these children, we have data, for instance, after 3 months or 6 months or even 12 months. And I've taken a close look at those data, and some of these children indeed seem to be recovered, but others didn't. So it's not to say that everybody who dropped out of the study didn't stutter anymore. And in our analysis, we used all data we had. So for the analysis on the measurement moments at 3, 6, and 12 months, these children were also included, but only for the last measurement moment at 18 months. Yes, we had data for 173 children. And what I also would like to say about that is that the 21 children who dropped out, it was a percentage of, I think, 11%. And that's rather low. It is lower than we estimated before we started the study, because dropout is a common phenomenon in a randomized trial, and we did all our best to limit the dropout rate. And well, I think we succeeded well in that, but it's related to a study like in daily practice to have some children dropped out. But we even had a girl, maybe that's nice to tell, we even had a girl who moved to Australia, but she was allocated to the DCM approach. So what we decided is to continue treatment through Skype contact. So even we could even capture her in the study because of the Skype contact with her. So we did everything we could to keep children in the study, but yeah, sometimes it was not possible.
Yeah, right. I would like to add, sorry, Peter.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say real quickly that I was speaking to some people about this recently and years ago, because we did a bunch of shows on Lidcombe, and I would ask folks, you know, is this mortality rate, you know, these children who drop out of the studies, is this a concern? And I've been told over and over again that this happens in every study, and it's mm-hmm. normal and typical and should be expected.
It's something you keep in mind when you design your study. So it was beforehand, we expected about 25 children, I believe, to drop out of the study, and it were less than that. So it didn't affect our outcomes in that way.
You were saying, Dr. Franken?
Well, I really am happy that you asked the question, because I do think that it's extremely important to to have a good look at children and families who drop out, and yes, to really study whether dropout is related maybe to one of the two treatments, and to really try to describe the reasons why families and children drop out. And as far, I think, and Karen described that, we just, as far as we know, we could not find differences in the reasons for dropping out between the two treatment arms. And that's important.
So the pattern was that a speech therapist had a personal issue. It wasn't like all the children dropped out of Lidcombe or all of them dropped out from the DCM restart.
No, not at all.
Okay. Do you guys have time for just a few more questions?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Okay.
Awesome. Got our talk with Dr. Marie Christine Franken and Miss Caroline, soon to be Dr. de Sonneville, and they are both in the Netherlands. So, as I'm sure you guys are aware, there is a big topic this year in speech pathology coming out of Australia. So, just to remind our listeners, Speech Pathology Australia submitted a proposal to the Australian Government of Treasury, and this proposal stated in part, quote, that Medicaid rebates be made available for the evidence-based speech pathology intervention Lidcombe program for eligible 3 and 4 year old children for the treatment of stuttering, end quote. Now, the proposal was not accepted. And at the time, the Stuttering Foundation stated that the proposal was, quote, seeking to provide reimbursement for only a single type of stuttering treatment, creating a one-size-fits-all policy for treating preschool children who stutter. We find this proposal unthinkable, and the Stuttering Foundation went on. How does your study impact or change this conversation? I mean, could Speech Pathology Australia or another organization make such a proposal again?
Well, I fully agree with the statement of the Stuttering Foundation, and I think that our results confirm that a one-size-fits-it-all policy is not just not right. So I'm very glad that the proposal by Speech Pathology Australia was not accepted. And well, hopefully our study results will help in future discussions on this topic. But I think for now, both treatments should be reimbursed because it's we did not show that one of them is really the best for every child. So,
yeah. Right. I agree. You know, our study has shown that I think both approaches have been shown to be equally good in the longer term. So both researched treatments should be reimbursed by insurance companies, and it's really, it would be very premature or, you know, not incorrect to recommend a single specific treatment for all children who stutter.
Well, along those lines, one of the Stutter Talk advisors reminded me of the big picture. So I'm going to read you what they think the big picture is, and you guys can say if it's right or if you want to change it. So this advisor said, the big picture is this. This was not a superiority study. This was to show that multiple methods may have equivalent value. This is critical for non-responders to either one of these approaches. There is now an alternative to try. Did this advisor get it right?
Carolyn? Shall I? Or, yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay.
You're waiting. Well, the study, it was a study with a superiority design, but indeed we did not only assess whether the Lidcombe is better than DCM, but we wanted to see if there's a difference between the treatments. And so we designed a study in such a way with a large sample size, a sample size that was large enough to see whether the Lidcombe would result in better outcomes or whether it would be the other way around. So it was a superiority study and not a study with an equivalent design. But I think this person is right in the conclusion that our results, our results show that there's an alternative to try if a child does not respond to either the Lidcom program or Restore DCM treatment.
Yeah, and I would like to add that, like Karen said, you know, the design of the study was a superiority study. You know, we really did want to find out whether one of both treatment arms was superior to the other, but we would be fine with every outcome. And I think that's important too. The project team had no allegiance to one of both treatments, and we were fully focused on what would, you know, the data tell us, and do it in an as rigorous scientific way as we could. So maybe that's important also.
Oh, that's great. And I could talk to you guys all day, but I'll try to make this the last question. We've talked a little bit about future research, and I want to hear more from you on that. I want to ask about future research. What about, so you have a Lidcombe group, a DCM restart group. What about a third group of children who stutter, who the therapist does both treatments at the same time?
I think it's an excellent idea also to set up a study in which probably best of both treatments are combined. Maybe, you know, combine the multifactorial content of DCM approach with maybe the rigorousness of the, you know, the highly structured format of Lidcombe treatment, and, you know, well, depending on, you know, the child, the family, maybe whether you are not are going to add contingencies or not. So, yes, would be a very good idea, I think, to set up such a study, you know, with three arms. But first of all, our team is now looking in more detail to the responders and non-responders in the long term, maybe to find out whether we can, you know, say something about risk factors for longer term outcome. Quite recently, actually, I think one or two studies have been published on this topic also. So it's very interesting to compare them with those. But of course, our main challenge now is to start collecting the longer term follow-up data and to see how these children and families are doing in the very long term. So that'll be very, very important. And another thing that we have discussed as a project group also to see whether we maybe can design other studies in which we decrease the treatment intensity maybe after 3 months or 6 months. Because if we look at the graphs of our study, then we see the main effect of treatment is, you know, within the first 3 months. Well, let's say the first 3 to 6 months, but then, you know, the improvement after 6 months is really, really very little. So maybe we could look at, you know, a more cost-effective way of giving treatment for that period and study it, because of course we would like to have the same good results, but if you can come there, if you can reach this result with less sessions, which would cost less money and less time of all those involved, that would be good, of course.
Yeah, I'm just being here in Wilmington, Delaware. I actually was raised only a few blocks from where Vice President Biden, where his family house is. So he was my senator growing up. And he stutters, and I met him as a kid, and I talked to him, and I didn't hear him stutter. And I read later that his recovery, if we want to call it that, I don't want to speak for him, but that his recovery from stuttering happened in adulthood when he was much older. So, you know, this whole idea of recovery is so interesting, because I totally believe that Vice President Biden stutters or did stutter, but I also believe that somehow in his late 20s or when he was an adult, his recovery happened. And so I'm glad you're doing that. that's a roundabout way of me saying I'm glad you're doing the long-term follow-up, and I can't, and you know I'll be bothering you in years to come back on air and talk about it.
Oh, I will be happy to come back to you if we really managed to collect these data, and I'm sure we can collect a lot of them. But well, the challenge is, of course, to collect as much as we can to really, well, and to lose as many children and parents, well, as possible, to really show, you know, the most complete data that we have. And well, that maybe is a good moment also to express my gratefulness to all the ones who have participated, have contributed to this study. Of course, first of all, I'm very proud of Carolyn, you know, for what she did, and was really, 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 I'm very proud of her, mm-hmm. what she
you.
Did. But also, of course, the clinicians, you know, the clinicians who participated, the clinicians who trusted us, you know, to deliver their data to us. And of course, the parents and the children, because the parents had to make probably more recordings, fill out more questionnaires, come back also when their child did not stutter anymore, etc. So such a huge study is the work of very, 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 very many people who were all dedicated to do this. So again, I'm very grateful for that. And thank you, Peter, for allowing me to say that.
Oh. And I'm sorry, I just want to add real quickly that I was really excited about what you were saying about the future research, because, again, I've been doing this work for about 15 years, and I find that with preschoolers who stutter, so much of the changes and the gains and the confidence we make together happens within the first 3 months, the first couple sessions, the first 5 to 8 sessions. And then I find that generally after 5, 8 sessions, then we reduce it to twice a month, then once a month, then the family cancels because it's a nice day and they want to go to the park. And, you know, when they want to go to the park, you realize that, oh, going to the park is more important than stuttering. So stuttering must be a lot better right now.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm excited that your research seems to be following the trajectory that I see in my practice. I really want to thank you both, Dr. Marie Christine Frank and Miss Caroline, soon Dr. De Sonneville, for joining us today on Stutter Talk.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.